You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. A federal agent walks into a biker bar looking for a country singing fugitive. This is not the setup for a joke. It's the story of FBI agent Ned Timmons and the drug investigation that led from Detroit to South America and ultimately to the downfall of one head of state. With us to tell us about it are the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and best-selling author who produced the series, Jake Halpern. Jake, welcome to Stateside.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And also with us today, Ned Timmons, the longtime Detroit FBI agent who was at the center of all of this, now retired. Ned Timmons, it's very good to have you on the show as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, April.
Deep Cover starts out with a rather startling anecdote that I'm afraid we cannot share in its fullness in a family public radio format. But suffice to say that you kick off this narrative letting us know that Ned is a widely traveled person of varied interests. Ned, will you tell us a little bit about your background in law enforcement in Detroit at circa the time that all of this began?
Well, prior to the FBI, I did 3 years in the Army, assigned to the CID in Korea. And I did 10 years as a police officer in Oak Park, Michigan, and then joined the FBI in 1981.
Why would you say that undercover work was appealing to you?
Well, Jake and I have talked about this, but I think when you are embedded with a motorcycle gang or with a drug cartel, like in the Cayman Islands, it's an ultimate acting assignment. And you have to size up who you're dealing with and deal with all of them different, whether you've got a rough biker or you're dealing with someone that's more civilized, you know?
Yeah. Jake, will you tell us the story of how you and Ned met?
Yeah, my 20 plus years of journalism, it was one of the more bizarre ways that I got onto a story. But I got a call from a friend of mine who had gotten a copy of an unpublished novel. He just said, written by a former FBI agent, and would I take a look at it? And so he sent me this PDF and I started reading through it. And it was the story that you outlined in the intro about this guy who goes undercover in the biker gangs in the 80s and infiltrates this drug smuggling network. And it sets off a sequence of events that result in the toppling of a dictator and the invasion of a foreign country. And I kind of read through this and I call back my friend out in LA and I say, so what's the deal with this book? Is this fact or this is fiction? And he said, as far as I know, it's pretty much all true, which I found, difficult to wrap my head around and believe. And I said, well, let me talk to this guy. Let me meet this guy. And that's when I first connected with Ned and started kind of asking him about this story. And we had this conversation and I said, Ned, if I'm going to turn this into a nonfiction podcast, we're going to have to fact check this rigorously. And I'm going to need to talk to basically every single person that you mention here.
Yeah. Could you describe for us, I guess, maybe Ned, what was your view on the corner of the global drug trade from the point of view of Detroit?
Well, obviously, Detroit is a major drug market, as all of the big cities are. In this particular situation, the people involved in the smuggling operation had a aviation operation where they flew over 200 airplane loads. Mostly Queen Air size airplane loads into Michigan, direct from Columbia, nonstop. And they also operated shrimp boats and barges where the shrimp boats would haul 40 to 60,000 pounds of marijuana and assorted amounts of cocaine. And the barges would haul 150,000 pounds up to 1 million pounds that they were planning when we arrested everybody.
Ned, could you explain how you were asked to take on this undercover assignment?
Well, I was working on the bank robbery and fugitive squad and arrested this biker. And obviously, the FBI is always interested in the bigger picture. And any major arrest I made, I always wanted to see where we could climb to, how we could climb the ladder or what was there. And it just happened that this one fugitive was able to introduce me to another guy who introduced me to a third guy who happened to be embedded in the smuggling operation. And it was fortuitous that he he ran what they call a PSE machine, which is a Vietnam era polygraph of questionable quality. And he ran that, and he tested all the people involved. You know, if they brought in a shrimp boatload, they might have 25 or 30 bad guys involved in it. If they brought in a barge, that could have up to 100 guys involved. And he tested them all to see if any of them were working for the government, et cetera. But it was unique in the fact that this is one of the few guys in the organization that knew everybody. Even the top guys didn't know everybody, but this guy did. He knew from the lowest bale thrower to boat guys to truck drivers to everybody involved. And we spent years, you know, identifying everybody and building a case on everyone.
Now, I don't want to break the flow of where this is going, but I just want to stop for a moment and note that, again, Jake, part of your job in putting together the podcast was going back and finding sources for these things that Ned is describing. What was your experience investigating this story?
Well, you know, like any journalist, I'm always skeptical. I mean, I don't trust anyone, sometimes including even myself. And so I had a conversation very early on with Ned, which was that, you know, this isn't personal, but I'm not going to be able to take your word for anything. And so early on, he produced a biker who we didn't end up, in the end, wouldn't go on record because he was worried about the repercussions, but who pretty clearly right away started verifying a lot of the things that Ned was telling me. The other amazing thing about this story is Ned was married to a woman named Kathy at the time who was also an FBI agent. And I started talking to Kathy. And Kathy basically had this great perspective because she was living with Ned. She was watching Ned go through this incredible ordeal of going deep undercover in biker and then drug cartels. So she saw it as his wife, but she also saw it as an FBI agent. And she actually even sometimes on a few occasions goes undercover with him to the biker bars. So Kathy ended up being this great other perspective on the whole narrative. But at every step of the way, I needed to verify it. And in the end, I tracked down, there were three kingpins involved in this smuggling cartel. And in the end, I managed to track down all three of them and interview all of them. I mean, it took a year and a half, and some of the interviews came in late, but yeah, I was able to kind of verify what I present to the listeners in the podcast. And the other thing, can I just say one more quick thing? Just a bit of historical context here. When Ned first gets onto this case, it's hard to imagine this, but in the 80s, the US government was just starting to realize just how sophisticated and elaborate these drug smugglers were. And up until then, the DEA had been kind of doing some busts, but they weren't as big and they weren't as well equipped as the FBI was. And so they knew the FBI had busted the mob and they said, hey, why don't you guys start infiltrating these drug cartels? And Ned was at the very forefront of this. So when he gets this biker who basically flips and brings him in, Ned is kind of early in, first boots on the ground of an FBI guy infiltrating the cartel. And the scale of what he starts to discover is so much bigger than anything that people can wrap their head around at the time that it's really pretty groundbreaking.
Well, Ned, what was the point at which you yourself realized just how far this case might go?
Well, we were doing smaller cases with these bikers that began cooperating. We did a 30-station meth lab out in Bakersfield, California, which was the largest meth lab at the time ever busted. We were doing 10 and 20 key deals in California and in Washington, D.C. And I kept hearing about planes flying nonstop from Columbia to northern lower peninsula Michigan. And it was hard for me to believe. Again, the FBI was just getting into the drug business. And it's like every arrest, we heard more and more about this gigantic operation that involves ships and barges and shrimp boats and airplanes and DC-6s. I kept hearing about it. And pretty soon, you know, I said, well, there's something to this.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, my guests are Ned Timmons, former FBI agent based out of Metro Detroit, and Jake Halpern, best-selling author and Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. They are the voices behind the new podcast Deep Covered from Pushkin Industries. Ned, through the course of this investigation, and a very elaborate process of playing both sides, you reached this point where you were getting closer and closer to General Manuel Noriega, the former head of state for Panama. Did you ever actually come in contact with him?
I never met him in person. When I was undercover in the Cayman Islands, I worked basically for one of the top three people in this organization. And he referred to him as Pineapple Face and the general. And you got to realize that, as far as I know, this was the first time they'd sent an FBI agent undercover outside of the United States. That was all DEA and CIA territory. So it took a lot of effort by Washington and a lot of effort by headquarters. We had to deal directly with Scotland Yard in London to get permission to operate in the Cayman Islands. But I was already out of the country, and we'd already stretched the bounds of FBI headquarters. And when I got a message back that they wanted me to meet with Noriega, I think it overwhelmed them. And the other problem is that the rules of the game are, you just like when we went into Cayman, we had to tell Scotland Yard, okay, there's going to be an FBI agent undercover in Cayman, May, June, or July. And that's all they would tell them, because we knew we had all kinds of leaks in law enforcement in the Cayman Islands. So to operate by the rules of the road, we would have had to tell somebody in Panama that an undercover agent was coming in. And you couldn't do that. The president and his whole staff of generals were involved in the money laundering and the drug trade and trading intelligence. And it was a very precarious situation, too, because Noriega was very close to Castro, and Castro very close to the Russians. So then you're entering CIA territory, and it got very complicated. Anyways, and I could see that headquarters balked at, you know, setting up a meeting with Noriega in person.
Right. Without giving away too much of what happens in the podcast, and there is a lot, Jake, could you talk about what the tipping point was for the U.S. to finally take action on the issues that Ned was investigating?
Yeah, so what happened was that for a number of years, the United States government had a close working relationship with General Noriega down in Panama. And we perceived him as our ally in the fight against communists. He actually received a number of letters of commendation, including from the Drug Enforcement Agency, who saw him as an ally in the war on drugs. But what Ned's investigation does is it fuses with a few other federal investigations. And as Ned works his way up the kind of ladder of this smuggling syndicate, it becomes clear that one of the silent partners and key players in this all is none other than Noriega, that he was facilitating money laundering by this cartel on a large scale. He was allowing the smugglers to fly in money, be picked up at the airport by limo, being brought directly to the bank, and he was profiting from it. So after the arrests, there are congressional investigations, and this guy, Stephen Kalish, the smuggler who was closest with Noriega, testifies that Noriega was basically my partner. So this is hugely shocking, right? Because here's this ally that's supposedly helping us fight the communists and fight the war on drugs. And in fact, he's lining his pockets with drug profits. So then this drug trafficking claims against him becomes our excuse for going down to Panama, invading and capturing this guy. It's unclear whether, you know, the cynic would say we were looking for an excuse to depose a dictator who would become, you know, unfriendly and an embarrassment to us. The patriot who wants to see it with wide eyes would say, well, this was a bad guy and we went down and get him. And we try to do a careful job in the podcast of letting you, the listener, come to your own conclusion about what you think was happening.
Right. Guys, the literature around undercover work often makes it sound pretty glamorous. And the period that you're helping to shed light on with the podcast has been so storied over the years, both in documentary work and in fictional films and books. And I just wanted to ask you both what you think the existing literature gets right about what was happening with undercover work at this time and what you think it misses. Ned, do you want to start out?
Well, you know, I took a lot of teasing. Oh, you're going back to the Cayman Islands, you know, down on the beach. And I got to say, it was nothing but stress down there. I had a cooperating witness that was an alcoholic drug addict, constantly threatening suicide, which I couldn't divulge to the FBI because they would shut it down. A guy that could turn, in my view, any minute, he could go to the people in the cartel down there and say, hey, he's an agent. So you had to deal with that. And, you know, there was a lot of pitfalls and also the stress to make it happen, to get results out of it.
To convince people to work with you.
Yeah. You know, I would say only the FBI could have handled this case. We indicted and convicted 300 people, and we used 7 divisions of the FBI in this effort, and everybody worked together. There was no animosity. There was no infighting. It was an incredible team effort.
Right. Jake, what about you? Did you have a different understanding of it now, having heard the actual facts from Ned?
Yeah, it's a great question. Coming in, what I knew was Donnie Brasco, right? Which was both, you know, they showed the danger, but it was definitely glamorized. And also, the Donnie Brasco movie shows this guy who goes undercover with the mob and has a complete firewall between his like undercover persona as a mobster and his home life. And I just assume that's the way it was. And what Ned's story shows is that the two bled into one another constantly. In fact, there were times where Ned had some of his biker informants coming back to his actual home with him. Now, bear in mind, his wife was an FBI agent. She has this wonderful line in the podcast where she said she saw these bikers walking up the driveway and her first thought was, oh my God, what will the neighbors think? And so, and I said to him, Ned, like, why? Why would you do that? And he said, I had to build trust with these guys, that my life was in their hands when we were out and vice versa. And I knew that if they knew where I lived and they saw this, that they knew that it was the ultimate act of trust, which I was somewhat skeptical. And then I talked to one of these guys that he brought home. And he said, basically, in no simple term, he said, that's what did it for me. So for me, it really was eye-opening, kind of debunking some of the kind of Hollywood myths of undercover work.
Author and podcast producer Jake Halpern has been talking with us today. Also, former Detroit Metro FBI agent Ned Timmons. Their new podcast is called Deep Cover. Gentlemen, it is, the only thing I can say is it's the podcast equivalent of a fantastic summer read. Thank you both so much for talking to us about it. And thanks for the series.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, April.